some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Sri Ganamala. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sahagurava Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Phenomena Namaste Sarasvati and Gaur Namaste. Nirvishesha Shri Nivali Prashti Chandrasita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 1, Texts 11 through 15 today. Okay, let's go through these Sanskrit 2.11 and 12 and translation purport, and then we'll do responsibly text 13. So we'll just read 11. Karmani punya nivahani sumangalani yayad shigat kali malapaharani kripa Malatmana nivasata yadu deva gehe indarakam samangamam munayo nishrishta visham mitra sita kanvo nirvasa grigurangira kashyapo vamadevo tri vashishto naradaya. Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sages Vishvamitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasa, Bhrigu, Angira, Kashyapa, Vamanadev, Atri, and Vashishta, along with Narada and others, once performed fruitive rituals that award abundant pious results, bring great happiness, and take away the sins of Kali Yuga for the whole world by merely being recounted. The sages duly executed these rituals in the home of the chief of the Yadus, Vasudev, the father of Lord Krishna. After Lord Krishna, who was staying in Vasudev's home as time personified, respectfully sent the sages off at the conclusion of the ceremonies, they went to the holy place called Pindarika. Report. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami begins to narrate the story of the Brahminical curse that arose against the Yadu dynasties by the Lord's desire. According to Sridhar Swami, certain religious rituals, such as the Ashvamedha Yajna, generate pious reaction. On the other hand, activities such as caring for one's children give immediate pleasure in the present only, whereas rituals performed as atonement take away sinful reactions. But the religious activities mentioned in verse 11, which are indicated by the word Karmani Punya Nivahani Sumangalani Dhyaj Jagat Kali Malapaharani, were pious in all respects. They produced abundant pious result and great joy, and were so potent that merely glorifying these rituals relieves one from all sinful reactions of Kali Yuga. The sages, called to Vasudeva's house to perform such auspicious religious activities, were satisfied with proper gifts and then sent them, and then sent by Krishna to Pindarika, a nearby holy place situated about 2 miles from the Arabian Sea on the coast of Gujarat. Its current name is still Pindarika. Significantly, Lord Krishna is mentioned here as Kalatmana, in the form of time, or the Supersoul. In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals himself to Arjuna as time personified, appearing on the battle of Kurukshetra to destroy all kings and armies who constitute a burden of the earth. Similarly, Kalatmana Devasata Yadudeva Gehe, Krishna was staying in the home of his father Vasudeva as time personified, thus indicating that the time was approaching for the destruction of his own dynasty according to his desire. So this is pretty self-explanatory. The pastime of the destruction of the other dynasty is beginning here, and we are hearing that Krishna is known as Kalatmana, the form of time, because obviously he is the source of all destruction, beginning and end of everything. So we'll go to text 13, and we'll do 13 responsibly. Ridantasthan upavraja. Kumara Yarunandana. Rupa Sangriya Paprachur. Avanita Avanita Vat. Vridantastan Rupa Vraja. Kumara Yarunandana. Rupa Sangriya Paprachur. Avinita Avinita Vat. Vridantastan Upa Vraja. Kumara Yarunandana. Upa Sangriya Paprachur. Avinita Avinita Vat. Oh, let's just do the same one. Okay, we'll read the next two verses together. Tevesha vipat srivesha sambam jambat isatam esha prichati ho vipra antarvatnya yasikshana prashtum vilajati sakshat vabruta mogadarshana prashoshanti putra kama. We have again a very long purport, so I think I'll just go to the translation of purport here. To that holy place, the young boys of the Yadu dynasty had brought Samba, son of Jambavati, dressed in woman's garb. Playfully approaching the great sages gathered there, the boys grabbed hold of the sages' feet and impudently asked them, with feigned humility, "O learned Brahmins, this black-eyed, pregnant woman has something to ask you. She is too embarrassed to inquire for herself. She is just about to give birth and is very desirous of having a son. Since all of you are great sages with infallible vision, please tell us whether her child will be a boy or a girl." Report. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has made the following comments. The impudent behavior of the young Yadus toward the sages headed by Narada, who were all Brahmins and devotees of the Lord, was a display of deviation from the path of Lord Krishna. Similarly, although the Prakriti Sahajiyas think of themselves as intimate associates of Krishna, the supremely merciful Lord's determination is perfectly correct in working to finish such false devotees. Such impostors actually never accept real service to Krishna. The Yadukumara's deception is termed seemingly humble, meaning that in fact they were anything but humble. Therefore, the ridiculing of Vaishnavas by the Lord's family resulted in great offense against the devotees of the Lord. A similar incident occurred during the pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when his own mother offended Sri Advaita Acharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally rectified this offense against a great Vaishnav, and thus the Lord showed his magnanimity. Lord Krishna's pastimes of destroying the Yadu dynasty is also a demonstration of his mercy to devotees. Believing the Brahmins, Vaishnavas, and Rishis to be foolishly lacking knowledge in material affairs of sense gratification, Yadukumaras dressed Samba, the son of Jambavati, as a woman and tried to mock the saintly assembly. Lord Krishna wanted to teach that such an offense committed against great devotees by his associate Samba would be the cause of the Yadu dynasty's destruction, all as part of his Leela. In modern times, such misbehavior has also manifested itself within the Gaudiya Vaishnav community. Unauthorized persons have initiated the process of deceitfully bestowing a woman's dress on their followers. This process is counted as a variety of aparad, or offense against Krishna. Such an attempt to cheapen and ridicule devotional service to Krishna is certainly caused by envy toward the real Vaishnavas, who are faithfully engaged in devotional service according to the rules and regulations of Vedic literature. As Rupa Goswami has said, Shruti Smriti Paranadi Pancharatra Vrindana Akantikai Mahare Bhakti Padaiva Kalpate. If one wants to demonstrate his great devotion to the Supreme Lord, but his process of devotional service violates the standard rules of revealed scriptures such as Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra, then his alleged love of Godhead will simply disturb society by misleading people from the auspicious path of spiritual advancement. Bhakti Samrita Sindhu 12101. The taking of a woman's clothing by a man in Krishna Leela was intended to point out this fact. Such an act amounts to cheating and ridicule the devotees of Krishna. Samba is a personal associate of the Lord, but acting as a harbinger of the future misfortune to be created in Kali Yuga by bogus followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Samba displayed this didactic pastime to help the living entities be blessed on the correct path of devotional service. The boys said to the sages, O Rishis, O Brahmins, O Narada, and other great personalities, can you tell us whether it will be a son or a daughter that will be born from a pregnant woman's womb? By dressing pure Vaishnavas in this way, they anticipated the fraudulent sampradayas of the modern age and their practice of sadhi beka, or dressing men as female associates of the gopis. This unauthorized activity constitutes contempt and mockery of the pure devotees of the Lord. Many false yogis, imagining they are distributing first-class devotion on the liberated platform, attempt to award the status of pure devotee to candidates totally ignorant of the transcendental tastes of Madhurya Rati, or the Lord's conjugal love in the spiritual world. Even though they know that the general population is unfit to imitate the liberated associates of the Lord, they artificially decorate ordinary persons with the ornaments of spiritual perfection, such as tears, the melted heart, and the standing on end of the bodily hairs. Thus, these bogus yogis introduce a process that misleads the world. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that the great misfortune caused by such false yogis or kuyogis was impossible to forestall in the Kali Yuga, he infected them with insane desires for material objects of lust, so that the ordinary person can easily identify such false yogis as deviated from the path of pure devotional service. The mockery of the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas by the young boys of the Yadu dynasty who dressed Samba in woman's garb and the resultant destruction of the Yadu dynasty conclusively demonstrates the uselessness of the Sahajya Sampradayas. Srila Jiva Goswami has confirmed that the lack of humility shown by the sons of the Yadu dynasty was an arrangement by the Lord himself. In other words, the members of the Yadu dynasty are ultimately associates of Lord Krishna, and to facilitate the instructive pastimes of the Lord, they act in apparently unethical ways. Om Ganadhyamrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Shaksalun Mithamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpatyubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So it's described here that this idea of the young boys dressing in women's clothing and then coming to the sages asking what will be the gender of the child within the womb is actually obviously Samba. They were playing a joke upon the great sages, but the offense was that they were mocking them. They came instead with false humility, wasn't real humility, and it really was an inappropriate way to address these great sages and saints. So in this purport, the first paragraph or so, there's a description or a quotation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur, and he uses this pastime as sort of a segue to talk about the modern practice of Sahajiyism. So what is Sahajiya? Prabhupada often defined as someone who takes devotional service very easily or cheaply. In other words, assuming that one is at an advanced stage of devotional service when one really is not at that stage and has not gone through the purificatory process of sadhana bhakti to reach the higher stages of devotional service. And thus one makes some display or affectation of one who is not only an advanced devotee, but one who is intimately connected with the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, the Rasa dance, etc. So I haven't personally seen this, but apparently one of the modern manifestations of this is that men will dress themselves in saris and women's clothing because they think they are in the mood of the gopis. And thus acting in the mood of gopis, they perform their acts of devotional service and make displays of great devotional service and advancement. Now, the problem here, as mentioned, is not only are they perhaps falsely imitating the gopis or imitating advanced devotees of the Lord when they really have not attained that stage of advancement, but often there is great cheating involved. And sometimes these people are actually performing all sorts of abominable activities. Sometimes they are acting as though they are Radha and Krishna, imitating those pastimes, and therefore they may engage in sex indulgence. And I was reading one class that Prabhupada gave or talk, he was saying, yes, they are dressing as gopis and smoking bidis. So, in other words, these people may not be up to the standard of devotional service, what to speak of being great pure devotees or advanced devotees and gopis. And so this becomes a problem. It becomes simply a disturbance, as being described in devotional service. And so, at least Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, therefore, explained that this is one thing that we can get from this pastime. Of course, we've described previously many, many ideas, many things that we have learned from this pastime, many reasons for the fratricidal war and the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. But here particularly there is this idea of Sahajiyism as being mentioned, and something that we need to be aware of and should understand carefully. First of all, backing up a minute, let's talk about Krishna's pastimes and the Rasa dance. If these are things that are we have to be very careful about, why are they being presented? Why are they there in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Why did Prabhupada write Krishna book in 1970 when we were very neophyte devotees? So, of course, all of these pastimes of Krishna are glorious. And even the past, not even, especially the pastimes, the five chapters of the Rasa dance and Srimad Bhagavatam are very, very wonderful. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that these five chapters of the Rasa dance are like the life heirs and a prized jewel within the treasury of his pastimes. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.33.36, at the end of the Rasa dance, Shukadeva Goswami says, Krishna manifests his eternal human-like form and performs his pastimes to show mercy to the devotees. Having heard such pastimes, one should engage in service to him. So in other words, Krishna performs all of these pastimes in such a way that it attracts the heart and the mind of living entities. And through that attraction to Krishna, we develop our devotional service, our bhakti to him. Another point is also mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself, 10.33.39 says, anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. And here's the important part. Thus, he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. So heard properly, the pastimes of Krishna, so even his intimate pastimes, the rasa dance, help us to overcome lust. But yet, these pastimes must be heard with a correct understanding. They should not be entered into lightly or in a lustful mood or in a mood of enjoyment or thinking that somehow that we are entering into these pastimes. So we are hearing these pastimes by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the past acharyas, but it's not that we think these pastimes are something that we are involved in personally. We enter into them. We are one of the intimate associates of Krishna. Of course, we may be, but that's usually a much later stage of realization, far beyond our neophyte understanding of bhakti yoga. Prabhupada described this many, many places. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 13, Srila Prabhupada said, "The natural inclination to devotional service is also based on scriptural injunction. And one who has attachment for such devotional service is not required to give it up simply on strength of scriptural argument. In this connection, it should be noted, there's a class of so-called devotees known as Prakriti Sahajya who follow their own concocted ideas, representing themselves as Krishna and Radha indulging in debauchery. Such devotional service and attachment are false, and those who are engaged are actually gliding down into a hellish path. This is not the standard of ragatmika or devotion. The Prakriti Sahajya community is actually cheated and very unfortunate." So Prabhupada is saying that we should not prematurely assume this intimacy, and particularly assuming this intimacy at the same time not being completely pure, completely free from sense gratification, not being pure in heart, and still having desires for sex life in our heart. Therefore, one must be very, very careful in entering into these pastimes. And hearing and realizing these pastimes requires qualification. This is the point. We don't lightly enter into this understanding of Krishna. This is very advanced topics for advanced devotees. And so some qualification must be there. Prabhupada continues in chapter 23 of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. "Sometimes people indulge in hearing portions of the Srimad Bhagavatam which they are not prepared to hear. Professional readers of the Bhagavatam indulge in reading the confidential portions and dealing with the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. These portions appear to read like sex literature. However, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be heard from the beginning, and those who are fit to assimilate the message of Bhagavatam are mentioned in the very beginning. A bona fide audience fit to hear Srimad Bhagavatam is generated after many pious deeds." So in other words, that's why we begin from Canto 1, proceed through the 10th chapter, to have a firm understanding of who Krishna is and what our relationship as very small eternal servants of Krishna is before we hear the more intimate pastimes of Krishna. So we need to have a correct understanding of the process of advancement in devotional service and not to jump to more highly advanced levels of which we're not really qualified. So we know that we begin with the process of sadhana bhakti. And within sadhana, which is the regulated practice of devotional service, following the rules and regulations, there are two stages, vaidhi bhakti and raghunuga bhakti. And so in vaidhi bhakti, one simply is practicing the rules and regulations out of duty. And this is where we all start, probably where most of us still are. We're in that process of regulated devotional service where we perform hearing and chanting, a process of bhajana, most primarily on the order of the spiritual master. Now, of course, we may be gaining some taste for the process of hearing and chanting, but we are doing it somewhat out of duty. I think that many of us would have to admit that without the order of the spiritual master, we might not spontaneously rise early in the morning, come to the temple, enthusiastically chant 16 rounds, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. And if you do have some enthusiasm for that, you're very fortunate, and you're gaining some taste for Krishna consciousness. But still, even though some taste may be developing, there's often a strong component of duty, and there's nothing wrong with that. That is sadhana bhakti. That is the process given to us by the acharyas. And as that that sense of duty becomes more and more a sense that one is actually appreciating and enjoying the process of bhakti yoga, this is the process. This becomes the stage of raghunuga. Now, it's careful. One must understand that it's not that raghunuga bhakti one gives up the rules and regulations. Not at all. It's still part of the process of sadhana. In fact, it simply means that one now has spontaneous attraction to the process of hearing and chanting. Prabhupada explains this in Majjhalila 22.109. Prabhupada says, spontaneous service is not artificial. One simply has to come to that platform by rendering devotional service according to the regular principles. Thus, one has to practice hearing and chanting and follow other regular principles by washing the temple, cleansing oneself, rising early in the morning, attending Mangal Artik, and so on. If one does not come to the platform of spontaneous service in the beginning, he must adopt regulative service according to the instructions of the spiritual master. This regular service is called Vaidhi Bhakti. So, I think we can all understand this. Prabhupada made it very clear, the principles and practices of devotional service, particularly the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, this process, this part of sadhana bhakti. And so, but one might ask, how does one act if one is truly advancing in Krishna consciousness? Sometimes I've heard devotees even say this, well, but after 40 years or 45 or 50 years, doesn't one advance in Krishna consciousness and become, you know, more situated in Raganuga, or should be trying to become more attached to the stage? I think the simple answer is that this is a natural process of advancement. And if one becomes advanced within the heart, that is up to his devotional service to Krishna and to Guru. And if that stage does start to develop, then how does one act? So that's an important question. Because if we take the example of Acharyas, and particularly our most recent example of Srila Prabhupada, who we had the opportunity to observe him in his personal dealings and personal action in life, we saw that Srila Prabhupada, who we know is an eternal associate of Krishna's, situated in Goloka Vrindavan, Uttama Adhikari position, at the highest stage of bhakti, did he discuss rasa very much? No. Did he discuss his personal relationship with Krishna? Did he talk about, you know, his sarup? Intimate disciples who were his servants can recount two, three, just tiny, very, very few incidents. And Prabhupada maybe revealed a little bit in an intimate moment, but not generally. Generally speaking, he didn't. This was his private ecstasy. This was his private internal process, you know. And for preaching and for example to the rest of the devotees, he showed us the perfect example of a sadhana bhakti. So he showed and he exemplified sadhana bhakti even when he was at the highest stage. So this is, it's a very simple example that we can understand. This is from, in fact, even the scriptures are very clear on this. This is from the Narada Bhakti Sutra. The Narada Bhakti Sutra 12. The Narada Bhakti, is it called Narada Bhakti Sutras or Narada Bhakti? Anyway, Prabhupada has about 80 verses, and Prabhupada only translated 13. He translated the first chapter, and then I think some other disciples, Gopi Pranana, translated the rest of it. But it's a very interesting small book of sutras, which are very condensed. Concepts or condensed ideas of devotional service. So I saw this one. It's in the Veda base. You can find this. Anyway, this is one Prabhupada translated and wrote the purport to. This is verse 12. It says, one must continue to follow scriptural injunctions even after one is fixed up in determined certainty that devotional service is the only means for reaching the perfection of life. And Srila Prabhupada says, one who wishes to advance to the platform of Raganuga Bhakti must follow the injunctions of the authoritative scriptures under the direction of the spiritual master. According to Sutra 12, even a person on a highly elevated platform of devotional service must execute the rules and regulations of scripture, what to speak of persons who are not elevated. In other words, neophytes in devotional service must strictly and scrupulously follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures to rise to the platform of unalloyed devotional service. So the strict following must be there. And even if one is on an elevated stage of devotional service, still one performs outwardly the practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations. So the devotee has an advanced devotee of the Lord has an internal life and an external life. It's kind of interesting. I mean, they're in harmony in one sense, but on the other hand, the external manifestation may be different than the internal manifestation, as we saw in the case of Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada very much checked his ecstatic moments, and only a couple times, we all know those pastimes of those rare occasions when Srila Prabhupada, you know, came to almost like the time when he was chanting in Atlanta, became stunned in ecstasy, like that. So those occasionally happen, but generally they are very internal. They were not externally manifested. Continuing that purport or the text on chapter 23 of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada said, devotional service with attachment can be executed in two ways, externally and internally. Externally, the devotee strictly follows the regular principles beginning with chanting and hearing, while internally he thinks of the attachment which attracts him to serve the Supreme Lord. Indeed, he always thinks of his special devotional service and attachment. Such attachment does not violate the regular principles of devotional service, and a real devotee adheres to these principles strictly, yet he always thinks of his particular attachment. So even if we have some attachment or we have some particular attraction to Krishna, that remains our internal meditation, internalization. I know sometimes people who are very engaged, for instance, sometimes pujaris who intimately serve a devotee year after year after year, serve the deity year after year after year, sometimes they gain some special sort of attraction or relationship with Krishna, you know, or their deity that they're serving, but that remains internal. You don't come off the altar and say, I had this realization, Krishna said this. No, this is very much internal. No. Externally, we engage in the regular process of devotional service as a good example for others, and also to not artificially assume some position which may not be accurate. So Jiva Goswami is described in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu Commentaries 1.1.11 that there are two forms of bhakti. One is called the bhava rupa, or the emotional form of bhakti, and the other is called chesta rupa bhakti, which is the active form. Bhava rupa comes at the stage of bhava. It's a very, very advanced stage where one is experiencing ecstatic emotions for Krishna. But for most of us, the active form of sadhana is this chesta rupa bhakti. And this is when we use our body, our words, and our mind actively in Krishna service. And this is the process of advancement and purification for the devotees. And this is what Srila Prabhupada emphasized. Srila Prabhupada always emphasized this activity in Krishna consciousness. In fact, it almost seemed like Prabhupada was always thinking of ways to engage us more and more in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada very much encouraged, especially our youth. Remember those old days, those of you who are my contemporaries, when we were really young and full of energy? and very probably we were very passionate 40 years ago. And so Prabhupada used that young, passionate energy to do so many things in spreading Krishna consciousness. And even today, all of us, we still use our body, our mind, our words in active service to Krishna. And Prabhupada had us, distributing millions of books, opening temples, issuing prashanam, starting festivals, so many ways that completely absorbed our mind, they absorbed our activities, our senses, always in Krishna's service. And this was wonderful. And we were happy. Devotees are happy when they're fully engaged, when the mind, the body, the senses are working for Krishna, as Prabhupada would say, 24 hours a day. No. Sometimes it felt like 24 hours a day. We used to not sleep so much, I remember. It was funny, I remember in the old days, often it's like any time a devotee sat down, what happened? They fall asleep, practically, if we ever sat down. We had to keep moving to stay awake. Sometimes we were working so hard. But yet it was ecstatic. But yet devotees were very, very happy, because we felt we were pleasing Srila Prabhupada, and we were pleasing Srila Prabhupada, and we still please Srila Prabhupada, through our different activity. And sometimes as we get a little bit older, that activity, the level or intensity may diminish a little bit depending upon the body, but at the same time, one should become absorbed more and more in thinking of Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna, remembering Krishna, and serving in whatever capacity as much as possible. One of my favorite quotes Prabhupada said, the execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life. So practical action, this is what Srila Prabhupada emphasized over and over to keep our minds and our bodies absorbed in Krishna consciousness and become purified to the point where the senses calm down a little bit, where we're not so driven by material desire, and those desires become purified in the process of hearing and chanting. So, some other understandings about our qualification for hearing these topics of Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.82, it's stated, O Brahman, how could anyone who knows the essence of life and is disgusted with endeavoring for sense gratification give up the transcendental topics of Lord Uttama Shloka after hearing them repeatedly? And we hear and we see that sometimes people do hear about the pastimes of Krishna and then give them up. And that's why the question is there. How could one give up hearing about Krishna? This verse explains it in a sense because it says that there are two processes that are needed to be steady in our attraction to hear about Krishna. One is that one must know the essence of life. It says, one who knows the essence of life, visheshagya. So in other words, one has to be fully fixed in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If we're not understanding, if we're simply hearing pastimes, but we don't understand the philosophy, we may give up that hearing. So we have to firmly understand this philosophy, why we are performing bhakti yoga, what are the results of bhakti yoga, and we have to be very, very much clear in our understanding of the nature of this material world, the nature of our entanglement here. So we have to know all the philosophy. We can't just focus just on hearing Krishna's pastimes without this deeper understanding, or as described here, that one may give that up. And the second part, it says that one must be disgusted with the endeavor for sense gratification. Vishana kama marganai. Disgusted with the endeavor for sense gratification. So not only disgust with sense gratification, but endeavoring for sense gratification. So these are important points. You know, we have to be giving up our material desires, and we have to be actively cultivating the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And in this way, one becomes more and more attracted to hearing about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, which further strengthens our resolve to engage in devotional service and become more purified. And it's also described that Krishna prema will not appear within those who have no faith in Krishna or offend Krishna's holy name. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes that comment in the purport to that verse. So, we have to engage faithfully without offenses. So the stress here is on the qualifications to hear these intimate pastimes of Krishna and not to falsely think oneself to be overly advanced until we are really at that platform. So in order to hear properly, we have to understand the philosophy from Canto 1 onward until we are more qualified to hear the pastimes of the 10th canto. We have to be not so attached to or endeavor for sense gratification. So there has to be a diminishing of material desires and desire for sense gratification to be able to hear these pastimes. We also must have faith in Krishna and Guru. It's also explained, only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in the Lord and spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. And one must not commit offenses to the holy name. And so with this practice of bhakti yoga, properly executing sadhana in this way that we've described, Krishna will little by little reveal himself. One will make advancement in Krishna consciousness, and one will be able to at some time, very soon, or after many lifetimes, as the case may be, in the practice of devotional service, at some point, Krishna will reveal himself more and more, and we more and more will understand these more intimate pastimes of Krishna, and eventually our own spiritual relationship with Krishna begins to develop. And that's the process of bhakti yoga. That full vision of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna is not fully achieved in still the stage of prema. Actually, I think it's in, isn't it Madhurya Kamdambini, where Vishnu talks about the stages where you see Krishna, first you hear Krishna, then you see, there's different stages. in the development of how Krishna fully reveals himself to the devotee. But at any rate, these are at very high stages of spiritual advancement, not in the beginning. So the devotee waits patiently and humbly, practices the process of bhakti in accordance to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual master, and knows that purification will come, the heart become cleansed, will become purified, and we will eventually be able to see Krishna and understand these more intimate pastimes of the Lord. So I'll stop at that point. Are there questions or comments from anyone? Yes. Yeah? Maybe Maharaj can speak something.
I think we very nicely covered all the points in this verse. I don't know. One thing in just it comes in my mind that that they are young boys and just out of curiosity are joking. Not that they are thinking that this has yet to dress. And they make the mistake. They realize that this was mistake on their part. They are repented also. So how we can well blame that this is Sajiya people, this even in whosoever, everyone is thinks that this was not good in their part of boys. They should not have done that part. And even they did, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, it appears that this was the exact the will of Krishna. Krishna wanted to go this way, that way.
Yeah.
Apart from those saintly person, they are not supposed to take this incident so seriously, curse, heaviest curse they gave them, whole dynasty. It is a little mistake. They have not any bad intention, joking. How come that the saintly person took it and the whole, they are blaming that this boy, this dude, and then imitating Sajiya people, this had coming?
You know, that's important. I was thinking the same thing myself when I was reading this, that, I can just imagine some, teenage devotee boys, that's the way they act, right? Doing some little trick or prank or, trying to be funny. And sometimes not being so mature and being a little disrespectful like this. This is kind of typical of young boys or teenagers or like this. So, it doesn't seem like it would be taken so seriously. And under normal circumstances, it probably wouldn't be. And I think a few verses earlier, it was described that, when we looked at the list of these are great sages. Vishwamitra, Vishishta, Narada, Kashyapa. These are like, very, very highly advanced souls. So certainly they would be very tolerant, one would think, and they would not take it so seriously, and certainly not to the point of destroying the outer dynasty, who they know full well. These are like personal associates of Krishna. This is Krishna's family. So we can only conclude that this was the arrangement of the Lord, because otherwise, why would they have done this? Why would the sages have reacted so strongly? Why would all this come about? And we're going to see, even though so many arrangements were made to counteract the effect, of the ball with the club. Still, so many things happened and led to this. And as we're reading the previous verses, it was all because it was Krishna's arrangement, because he wanted to wrap up this Leela. He wanted to bring his associates back with him to Krishna, Krishna Loka, and also to, some other reasons as far as, the burden of the earth, removing that so that that power of those the kingly dynasties and their military power would no longer be there. So Krishna had, so many reasons to enact this pastime, because otherwise it wouldn't really make sense, would it? It wouldn't be logical that there'd be such a strong reaction from these saintly persons, especially directed to Krishna's family members.
Yesterday's sloka, yesterday's text, I believe end or maybe middle to end, There's a three reason given that Lord Krishna felt incomplete and he need to fulfill the three desire or three reason that he want to accomplish. And I'm paraphrasing. One was that the demigods who joined with the Dwarkavasi to kill the demons and to establish religious, and they need to go back. So one place in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada also says this: Lord Krishna with Jambavati prayed to Shiva for a son. Then Sambo came. Now today you read the Sambo pretended like a pregnant lady. But this Sambo, Sanatana Goswami Pad write, actually is not a son of Jambavati and Krishna, but it looks like it has Ganesh. Prabhupada says he is a Ganesh and Sambo, both are in one. So not that eternal associate will be killed or destroyed. They are eternally with Krishna. But their expansion, that demigod join with them, they will be destroyed.
You know, it's an interesting point of how there can be these sort of partial expansions. We know Krishna can expand unlimitedly, but even the jivas seem to be able to. I remember there was read, I forget where I read this, it may have been in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that like Nanda Maharaj, there's a Nandan Sananda, you know, in the spiritual world, like Krishna, and that Nanda is the same, is also the same as Nanda, Krishna's father, that he expands. Well, in other words, apparently, even some of the, you know, great liberated souls, the eternal associates, they can expand themselves. So
Drona.
Like, and I think this is what you were saying, what you were quoting, is that while they are in the spiritual world eternally, they can also sort of manifest or partially manifest, and sometimes we even hear about certain certain intimate associates who apparently are jivas, who are almost combined, you know, like that. So who knows? I mean, in the spiritual world, anything is possible. We don't have these same limitations of space, time, and like that. I mean, after all, I mean, as far as inhabiting the body, that's just a temporary thing, you know, in this material world. And so, interesting point.
Another point you made very nice, that even somebody become advanced and if he develop the sentiment of with the self-motivated happiness in loving service, that still he has to follow the rules, regulation. And so Vaidhi Bhakti turned to Raganuga or spontaneous. And I always was happy to hear that Srila Prabhupada answered to that also. Very nicely you explained, very nice. Because these things you are giving very simple way, very nice. But in internet, I didn't go there, but one Maharaj told me, they have a big fight about Prabhupada's position. Like literally, hundreds of devotees gets involved online and just talking about Prabhupada's position. But very simple way you mitigated that. It was very interesting that one of our ISKCON devotee put it also there, that Srila Prabhupada was asked that in order to claim or declare as a spontaneous loving devotion, there has to be a Brajabhashi that sadhaka must follow, otherwise not possible. So they asked that question to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "I'm here."
Yes, he said. "And who is that? Who is that? Devotee that Rajabasi says, 'I am that one.'" Yeah, right. Yeah. The Prabhupada said, "We don't have to." You know, it's interesting. I was in relation to what you said. A couple months ago, when I was in Hawaii, I was with Shruti Kirti quite a bit, and we were talking, and you know, because Shruti Kirti was with Srila Prabhupada day in, day out for like 3 years, every single day, in all kinds of intimate moods, in the evening, at night, you know, everything. And he said, he was telling me, and I'm not even going to repeat it because it's confidential, but one time Prabhupada gave a little indication to him about maybe what his eternal position was, and he actually kind of indicated to Shrikirti what his eternal position was. He said one time, and it wasn't even like he fully said it, he just kind of gave a hint. You know, one time in 3 years with somebody very, very close. So yeah, so she'll... Oh, jeez. Don't you hate that when people do that? Don't turn off their phone, so rude. What? No, I'm not going to say it. No, because Prabhupada didn't want us to engage in these conversations, you know, so much. But yeah. Prabhupada would never have thought it was that important. His position, as far as we're concerned, his position is he's our guru. He is our spiritual master. And we are taking instruction from him. And we know that he is a pure devotee. He has some relationship with Krishna. And, you know, and generally speaking, Prabhupada's given different indications. I mean, he said, you know, in our prayers, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's prayers, the samsara prayers we sing every morning, indicates that the spiritual master is in the Madhurya Rasa, that he's making intimate associate, you know, relationship with Radha and Krishna. And Prabhupada said, not always. He said, that's because Vishnu's spiritual master was in that rasa. And he indicated there could be other rasas as well. And we don't need to speculate, you know, on Srila Prabhupada's position. Janmasthami.
It's an interesting point how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur stressed that the Sakhi Vedas, those that would imitate gopis and dress up, men dressing up in women's clothing, that they're actually offensive and they're envious of genuine Vaishnavas. But it seems that concept can also be extended to Prakriti Sahajiyas that prematurely start the practice of Raghunuga Bhakti. You know, they may not put on the dress, but oftentimes we see that there's a whole, and there's an element, you know, within this kind of devotees that kind of went in that direction. They're becoming very critical of the devotees that maintain Vaidhi.
Yeah.
And you know, then we also see that, I know personal examples of those that were supposedly practicing Raghunuga Bhakti, but the standard sadhana is just practically non-existent.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that same principle.
It's not just wearing saris or something like that. No, it's a whole process of prematurely coming to or thinking oneself is at that higher stage. In fact, that happened very, very early on. Some of you may know about the history in Los Angeles. There was a group of devotees, it was called the Gopi Bhava Club, and they were very much interested, and they weren't really doing anything that wrong, but they were very interested in reading about the pastimes of the Rasa dance and Krishna and the Gopis, and they weren't so much interested in hearing the other pastimes. They wanted to hear the most, you know, advanced, and Prabhupada was furious at them. Furious. You know, he condemned that. He said, this is not appropriate, of course, and he explained that all the pastimes are equal. You know, Krishna's killing the demons, Krishna's dancing the Rasa dance, it's all absolute, it's on the same level, and that they were very much prematurely going to, you know, to a stage that they weren't ready for, and Prabhupada was very much against that. Now, I was going to talk about another group, but I won't do that. You're at the Bible time. Yeah, but we see this in other Vaishnava groups sometimes, this idea of prematurely, you know, thinking one is at a certain stage. Yeah, I remember one young woman who was a very new devotee. I think she had been off drugs for at least a month. And, you know, she once asked, she was with another group, and she asked me once, shouldn't we be thinking how Radharani is thinking? And I said, I have absolutely no idea how Radharani is thinking. I wouldn't presume to be thinking about how Radharani is thinking. We should think, what does Srila Prabhupada want from me? What is my guru? Excuse me. Anyway. No. Okay? Okay, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.
Yes.